Romans chapter 12. I want to read verses 1 and 2. Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good, acceptable, and perfect will of God. These verses, of course, are very familiar. We've all read them many times. We've all heard them read many times. We've all heard them referred to many times. We've heard them preached many times. So we're very well acquainted. Almost everyone here is very acquainted with these two verses. But we must not confuse acquaintance with a real grasp and understanding, or even the practice of what is being said. The danger of familiarity with these verses is they be looked upon in a very superficial way, and I believe they are many times, and that we do not give due consideration to what is being said here, leading to the failure to see the significance and the magnitude of what is being taught here, of what is being commanded here. Our great need is for these words to press upon our hearts and to make life-changing impact in our lives. In looking at these verses, it's important that we do not lose sight of whom Paul is writing. He refers to them as brethren. But in chapter 1, verses 6 and 7, he refers to them as the called of Jesus Christ, the beloved of God, called to be saints. It's also important that we recognize the spirit in which Paul writes these words. And we see that in verses 7 through 11 of chapter 1, where we see that his spirit was one of love and concern and a burden for their spiritual well-being and a desire for them to be strengthened spiritually. With that spirit, he writes what we've just read in Romans 12, 1 and 2. In looking at these verses, it's important that we understand the structure of the book of Romans, 16 chapters, but it consists mainly of two parts. Chapters 1 through 11 is mostly a doctrinal dissertation, the emphasis being upon the character of God and the blessings of salvation. And that forms the foundation of what we read here in Romans 12, verses 1 and 2. And here in Romans 12, there is a transition to the practical implications of the doctrines that were presented in chapters 1 through 11. Looking at our text, it's also important that we recognize there are some specific duties or obligations that are being presented. We are to present. We are not to be conformed. And we are to be transformed. In looking at this, we notice also that these are personal duties. They're ongoing. They're continuous. They're entire. They're to be done in a spirit of cheerfulness. They're to be done in a spirit of readiness. And they are to be, it is all to be unto God. Everything is to be moving in the direction of God. We see that it's to be holy, acceptable. In order to be acceptable, it must be done as specified by God. And it is a service. And it is reasonable. It is a reasonable service. Now, we see also that this service in verse 2 is a manifestation of that which is good, a manifestation of the good, acceptable, and perfect will of God. And none of these duties are an hour or two duty, a day or two duty. They're not sporadic. They are continuous, and they are lifelong. We see the tone of the verse, of the verses. He says, I beseech you. Paul is pleading. He is pleading, he is begging, he is fervently urging the called of Jesus Christ, the beloved of God, the called to be saints. He's urging them to carry out something, some very specific duties and obligations. He's urging them to live a certain life, a very particular life. And the fact that he is beseeching shows the urgency of the words. It also shows the importance and the consequence of the matter that he's speaking of. But in this message, we want to place the emphasis upon a command given by way of warning. Verse 2, be not conformed to this world. The word be, of course, is singular present tense verb, stating a continual state of being or existence. In other words, be not being conformed to this world. The word conform simply means to comply. Do not comply to this world. I want to speak this morning on nonconformity to the secular and the process of secularization. We must not only not conform to the secular, we must not conform to the process of secularization that is always taking place. Now, the basis of nonconformity, that is, the rationale of it, the reason, the grounds, the motivation, is stated in verse 1, the mercies of God. We are not to conform because of the mercies of God. Again, in chapters 1 through 11, Paul, in a very clear and precise manner, laid out the doctrine of God's plan of salvation. It is salvation by grace alone, apart from the works of man. In laying that out, he presented the truths of election, predestination, adoption into the family of God, atonement, reconciliation, regeneration, effectual calling, repentance, faith, the purposes and providences of God, the provision and protection of the Lord, the unchanging love of God. These all fall under the heading of the mercies of God. Paul, having written of those mercies, notice in chapter 11, verses 33 through 36, and this leads into our text. So he's written of these mercies, and he says in verse 33, all the depth of the riches, both of the wisdom and knowledge of God. How unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding out. For who hath known the mind of the Lord, or who hath been his counselor, who hath first given to him, and it shall be recompensed unto him again. For of him and through him and to him are all things, to him be glory forever. And that proceeds into our text. Paul is caught up, he's overflowing with praise for this plan of salvation, the mercies of God. The mercies of God. You see, it's by the mercies of God that God loved us unconditionally. It's by the mercies of God that he determined to save our soul. And he sent his Son, Jesus Christ, to live a perfect life of righteousness on our behalf. And to go to the cross with all of our sins. And to give his life in our place, paying a sin debt that you and I could never pay. And then he would go to the grave. And he would conquer not only death, but he would conquer the grave by his resurrection. He did all of that before you and I were even born. But in time, we were born. And we were born into this world as guilty sinners before God. Trapped in the depths of sin. Trapped in the depths of defilement and unrighteousness. We were guilty. We were under the condemnation of God. We were alienated from God. We were estranged from God. We were living in darkness and in enmity to God. We were in rebellion against God. Spiritually bankrupt. And in the predetermined hour, Jesus Christ came where we were, raised us up, and set us free. That's the mercies of God. And due to those mercies, we have passed from death unto life. Our name is written in the Lamb's Book of Life. We are bought with the shed blood of Jesus Christ. We have been redeemed from the curse of the law and from the power of darkness. Set free from the clutches of sin and Satan. Delivered from the wrath to come. The mercies of God. Because of those mercies, we have forgiveness of sins. We have been reconciled to God. We have peace with God. We are the children of God. Heirs to God. Joint heirs of Jesus Christ. Inheritance reserved in heaven for us. All due to the mercies of God. We're rich. We're eternally secure. Clothed in the righteousness of Jesus Christ. By his mercies, I am allowed to have fellowship with the God of heaven. Have access into the presence of God. His mercies. You see, it's because of his mercies that we're here tonight, today. It's because of His mercies that we have a King James Bible and been placed in a New Testament Baptist church. It's all due to the mercies of God. Every day we wake in the midst of the mercies of God. And every day we can say with David, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. And we can say with Jeremiah in Lamentations 3 and verse 22, it is of the Lord's mercies that we're not consumed. It is the mercies of God that holds back from us the wrath that we deserve. There's incentive in the mercies of God. Paul said, I beseech you by the mercies of God. He says, my plea is not based upon my intellect. My plea is not based upon my charm or my charisma. My plea is not based upon motivational words. My plea is this, God has been merciful to you. And therefore, I beg you. He goes into what we read here in Romans 12, verses 1 and 2. So the backdrop of Paul's plea is the mercy of God. With that in mind, we come to a danger that we are to avoid. Be not conformed to this world. Be not being conformed to this world. Do not comply. Do not adhere to this world. Do not accept this world. Do not go along with, do not fall in line with this world. Do not yield to it. Do not surrender to it. Be not conformed to this world. Why? Because God has been merciful to us. And we need to understand what is meant in those words, this world. Jesus, speaking of it in John 7 and verse 7, said, me it hateth. This world hates Jesus Christ. He says, me it hateth because I testify of it that the works thereof are evil. The world hates Christ. Be not conformed. Matthew 18, verse 7, woe unto the world because of offenses. Peter in 2 Peter 2, verse 20, mentions the pollutions of the world, the contaminations, the toxins of the world. The world is a toxic place. It is toxic to spirituality. Be not conformed. 1 John 4, verse 3, he spoke of the spirit of Antichrist that is in the world. That is, this world is opposed to and against Christ. It is opposite of Christ. It stands rival to Christ. It's unlike Christ. It militantly seeks to reverse and undo what Christ does. In 1 John 5, verse 19, we read, the whole world lieth in wickedness, vileness, and depravity. So oh, how we need to hear Paul as he fervently pleads to God's people, be not conformed to this world. The world, as we've seen in Sunday school, is an order or an arrangement of life that is evil, that is satanically informed and ruled. Some child of God says, well, I disagree. I don't believe that the world is satanically informed and ruled. You're already conformed, my friend. You're already there. It is a kingdom of darkness. Oh, how we need to hear the plea. We need to hear the plea in the setting of God's mercy. Be not conformed to this world. The world is the pathway of the unsaved who know not God. The pathway of those who are walking in darkness of their own fallen state. It is the life and activity as the result of the fall of man. It is the sum total of the thinking and the ideas and the philosophies and the values and the attitudes and the ambitions and the goals and the pursuits and the behavior of those who are alienated from God. Be not conformed to this world. It is the viewpoint of unsaved man. It is the viewpoint of those who are without God and of those who are without Christ. It is their viewpoint of God. It is their viewpoint of man. It is their viewpoint of life. Do not be conformed to the world's viewpoint of God, to the world's viewpoint of man or life. Be not conformed. It's the viewpoint of those whose understanding has been darkened and who are spiritually dead. Again, we need to hear the plea. In the setting of God's mercy, be not conformed to this world. It is a fervent plea for God's people. Do not allow yourself at any time, in any situation, to be assimilated into the world system. Don't do that. It is, do not allow yourself to be drawn in by the system of the world. Do not allow yourself to be fashioned, to be molded, to be governed by the system of the world. Do not allow yourself to be stamped with the world's stamp. Do not allow your brain to be stamped with that stamp that says, world. Do not be conformed to this world. He's begging. He's pleading. God warned the children of Israel this very thing. Notice in Leviticus chapter 18. Leviticus 18. Verses 3 and 4. After the doings of the land of Egypt, wherein ye dwelt, shall ye not do. And after the doings of the land of Canaan, whither I bring you, shall ye not do. Neither shall ye walk in their ordinances. Ye shall do my judgments and keep mine ordinances to walk therein. I am the Lord your God. And in Deuteronomy 12 and verse 30, he said, take heed to thyself, that thou be not snared by following them, that thou be not entrapped by following them. Again, be not conformed to this world. Now in Romans 12, verses 1 and 2, there are two worldviews presented. There's the world, mentioned specifically, and there is God. These two worldviews are diametrically opposed. The current of the world is away from God. And the plea is, be not conformed to the world. Do not be moved away from the one who in grace and mercy saved your soul. The world, in all of its wisdom, does not know, does not honor, does not admire, does not trust, and does not seek God. And the pull of the world is in the direction of the antithesis of the Lord and the will of God. In 1 Corinthians 1, verse 20, we read, "Hath not God made foolish the wisdom of the world?" And in verse 21, "The world by wisdom knew not God." The world and all of its wisdom and all of its academia knows not God. Be not conformed to this world. Oh, how we need to hear that plea in the setting of God's mercy. And do not be mistaken. Our nation, our society and culture is secular at its core. It is secular. Our nation, our society and our culture is secular, almost entirely secular, through the process of secularization. And this process has been going on for a long time. And it is a calculated process by the enemies and haters of God. And there is great danger for the child of God that we become a victim of the process of secularization. So what is secularization? Well, it's the process of separating from the Lord. The process of separating from this book. Whether it be in your mind, your opinions, your attitudes, or the way you live. It is the process of separating from God and this book. Someone will say, "Give me your opinion. I don't want a Bible verse. Just give me your opinion." That's dangerous. Secularization is the process of removing the influence of God in this book. Again, it's a process. It is the process of removing biblical faith, biblical morality, biblical values. It is the process of removing all of these things from the public arena. Secularization is the process, basically, of de-Christianization, doing away with Christianity. It is the process of moving from absolutes to relativism. Moving from morality to immorality and amorality, and there is a difference. From the spiritual to the material. It's a process. Secularization is the process of moving toward acceptance, tolerance, non-judgmentalism of what is condemned by God. Oh, how we need to hear the plea in the setting of God's mercy. Be not conformed to the process of secularization. Again, the secularization of our nation, of our society, and our culture. It's been going on for a long time under the mask of this is good for you. This is good for society. This is good for mankind. This is the progress of man's intellect. And I remind you, God hath made foolish the wisdom of this world. And the world by wisdom knew not God or knows not God. The process of secularization took place and is taking place in a very systematic way, with the incessant bombardment and the perverted narration and the pervasive lies and the control and the manipulation of atheistic humanism, which attempts to function with the exclusion of God and His principles. Be not conformed. Humanism states in their manifesto, the original came out in 1933, then there's an update in 1973. We are convinced that time has passed for theism and deism. Be not conformed. Humanism is the religion of self. And it states, as non-theists, we begin with humans, not God. That's disaster right there. Nature, not deity. Reason and intelligence are the most effective instruments that humankind possesses. Again, with all their wisdom, they know not God. And there is no substitute for the intelligence of man. We believe in individual autonomy, independence. Again, it is the religion of self. And its main doctrine is believe in yourself. Believe in yourself. That has been proclaimed through Barney, Clifford, on and on we can go. Believe in yourself. It has been proclaimed and preached and flaunted in every area of life. Even so-called Christianity today is man-centered. Arminianism is a form of humanism. Self, the mega churches today, man-centered. Believe in yourself is the drumbeat of the day. It's the mantra of the day. It's every day, it's everywhere. Believe in yourself. And this is all carefully calculated by the God haters. For they know, whether God's people know it or not, they know that when man becomes the be-all and end-all, then there is no objective standard. And all becomes subjective. And a degenerate society and not God becomes the standard. We're there. That's where we are today. Humanism states traditional moral codes fail to meet the pressing needs of today and tomorrow. Fail to meet the pressing needs. Look around and see what their philosophy has done. Has it met the needs of mankind? You'd have to be a complete fool to believe it has in any way. Humanism states ethics are autonomous. That is, they're separate and apart from any standard. Ethics are autonomous and situational, needing no theological sanction. Ethics stem from human need and interest. And as we've stated before, we've given the percentages, we're not going to do that, but the vast majority of our population have lived their entire life exposed to atheistic humanism, exposed to these teachings. The vast majority of our population have had their brains saturated with atheistic humanism. Saturated with the beliefs of humanism, with the convictions and with the views and the feelings and the attitudes of those who are offended and hostile toward God. And in a time when the Word of God has been systematically removed from our national conscience. That's how the majority of our population have been influenced. And we have degenerated. Don't kid yourself. We have degenerated into a godless, secular society where the emphasis, the aim, the goal is self. The end result is there is lawlessness. Here's the prevalent thought and attitude of a secular society. Well, if it's good for you, then it's legit. If it's good for you, it's okay. If it's good for you to fornicate, it's okay. If it's good for you to be involved in homosexuality, it's okay. I wouldn't, but who am I to judge? That's the thought process of a secular society. And many of God's people have conformed to the process of secularization. How many times you hear God's people with a Bible in their hand say, well, who am I to judge? You're already conformed. You're already there. You're just like them. It's all happened through a process. Oh, how we need to hear this plea in the setting of God's mercy, be not conformed. And this whole religion of self results in increased understanding. You ever notice that if you listen to people today, we're the most understanding people in the history of mankind. Religion of self. We have understanding. We have sympathy. Understanding and sympathy for the sinful and abominable behaviors of man. And what does that do? What does that understanding and sympathy lead to? It leads to increased hostility toward God and God's people who just do not understand. That's where we are. Be not conformed to this world. And now it's the norm. It's the norm to praise and to revere and to idolize and to elevate and to celebrate the abominable and the offensive and the repulsive. That's the norm today. That's entertainment today. Be not conformed. And here we are in an immoral society and culture. And by that we simply mean behavior that is contrary to thus saith the Lord. That's immorality. It's also an amoral society and culture, which simply means, and which is the result of the religion of self, there are no moral standards. There are no moral restraints. There are no moral principles. filling people with indifference and apathy concerning questions of right and wrong. Who's to say what's right? Who's to say what's wrong? Now, almost everywhere you turn is the demonic. And that which is demeaning to humanity, the blasphemous, and that which erodes biblical conviction. You don't have a chance today in this world if you do not have biblical conviction. If you don't have conviction that thus saith the Lord, you don't have a chance. You're going to be swallowed up in the devilish system of the world. You've got to have conviction of what this book teaches. And even when you have conviction, you have to resist with every fiber of your being the influence of the whole process of secularization. And most of God's people do not take it serious enough. The result of the secular, the result of the process of secularization is the loss of reverence, the death of biblical reason, the loss of biblical discernment, the ability to separate error from truth, the loss of morality, the loss of decency, the loss of shame. It's 12 o'clock. Facebook is perhaps the clearest manifestation today that there is no shame. No shame. No shame even amongst God's people. They'll put on Facebook what they did on the Lord's day rather than being in God's house. No shame! We're in a time of the religion of self. Do you ever think you'd see the day when people every 10 minutes are taking a picture of themselves like everybody wants to see it and post on Facebook? It's awful. It's a process of secularization and we fall into it. We get up in the morning, what do? We grab our cell phone. And we begin to look at this stuff. We're falling victim to the secularization process. Need to get back on track. Not that I was off track. There's the loss of definition of words. Words don't mean anything anymore. There's the loss of meaning in sexuality. Doesn't mean anything anymore. There's a loss of meaning in life. There's a loss of meaning in marriage. There's a loss of meaning in the home. There is a devaluation of life. The loss of fulfillment. The loss of happiness. The result is a nation and society and culture spinning out of control. Caught in a cycle of absolute insanity and destruction. A nation that is sinking in the depths of spiritual bankruptcy. Surrounded on all sides by wickedness and abomination and blasphemy and heresy and dysfunction is everywhere. Be not conformed to the process of secularization. And as the wickedness of the times increase, the urgency to be what we ought to be increases. The urgency not to be conformed increases by the day. Be not conformed. Why? Because God has saved your soul. Be not conformed. Be on guard. At all times, against the deceptions and the perversions that seek to lure and seek to divert and seek to cut off and hem in and shackle us spiritually, disabling us from being able to live the life that we're called to live. Do you realize today that because many have become a victim to the process of secularization, they're not even able to live the life that God has called them to live? Today, the pattern of a secular world and the influence of the process of secularization is thrust upon us to a greater degree than ever before. From the time we get up in the morning to the time we go to bed, we are bombarded with the sounds and the visual images of both the secular and the process of secularism. Whether it comes from the newspaper, the radio, the television, the internet, background music, magazine covers, billboards, etc. It's everywhere. And we constantly need to hear this: be not conformed to this world. You see, the secular world and the process of secularization is not neutral. It doesn't just sit in a book in a library somewhere. It's not neutral. And therefore, there must be continual resistance. It is deliberate. It is calculated. It is a deliberate and calculated assault upon the minds of humanity, also upon the minds of God's people. Be not conformed to this world. And we know it's true. We'll say a new sin. There is no new sin. Something begins to happen and God's people are so disturbed. Give it 5 years. Everybody will calm down. Because of a process of what? Secularization. Everybody will just calm down. And all of a sudden, well, I don't agree with it. But, you know, who am I to judge? How sad. How sad. It is not our calling, we'll close, to fall in line with this world. That's not what we're here for. It's not our calling to harmonize and become compatible with secularism and the whole process. We are here to bring glory to the one who saved our soul. And we must not fall in the trance, and it is a trance, of a secular world or the process of secularization. You fall into a trance, you shut your brain off. You can't afford to do that because of what's going on. And all of this results in biblical convictions, a biblical worldview being diluted. And you think about it. If your biblical worldview is diluted, have you not become secular? You have, to some degree. Our biblical worldview cannot be diluted. You can't mix the world's view and a biblical view. You can't mix them. That's a delusion. It's a weakening. Our calling is, be not conformed to this world. Take it as a compliment. When your teenager, grandson, granddaughter, whoever, well, you just don't understand. Thank you. I appreciate you saying that. I take that as a compliment. I don't want to understand. I don't want to understand how that which is abominable is okay. I don't want to even begin to understand that. We must not have our view of life be diluted. We must look at everything through what this book says. Because if we become conformed, we lose our identity as the people of God. Most people today that claim to be people of God, not here, but most people who claim to be people of God, there's no difference between them and the rest of the world. They've lost their identity. It results in a loss of testimony for God. You cannot have a good testimony if you do not stand apart from the world. Results in a loss of usefulness in God's service. Oh, that today, the year 2017, we would hear this plea, be not conformed to this world. Be not conformed to this world. That it would grip our hearts. Somebody will say, well, you think everything's wrong. No, I really don't. But I'd rather go there than the other way. If I got to go too far either way, I'll go too far that way. But I'm here to tell you I'm in no danger of going too far. I personally am not in danger of doing that, going too far, saying this is wrong, this is wrong. God help us not to be conformed to this world. God help us to encourage each other not to be conformed to this world. And when we see each other perhaps beginning to think like the world, as kindly as we can, brother, sister, you better watch out. You're heading down a wrong road. God help us not to be conformed to this world. You know what happens? Children become conformed, grandchildren become conformed, and oh, they're so sweet. Don't fall for that. God help us. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse song. And oh, how we ought to thank God for those who are not conformed and those who are using every fiber of their being. I believe that's most of us here, resisting conformity to this world.